listening to an episode of The Rewind, a podcast series by the Howard Stein Center for Presidential Studies in Grand Rapids, Michigan. This episode features audio from our Wheelhouse Talk on December 1st, 2023. We invited the Dean of the Kirchhoff College of Nursing at GVSU, Tricia Thomas, to our stage to share her story and answer student questions. Dr. Thomas was joined on stage by one of our very own lead CLA fellows, Henry Pena, to moderate. There is also an Off the Stage podcast episode that I did with Dr. Thomas, and it was so good. So I'll link that below and make sure to check that out too. All right, let's rewind.
So you all know that we are honored to host Dr. Tricia Thomas, Dean of the Kirchhoff College of Nursing, to the stage this evening to share her story and lessons on leadership. Serving as our moderator this evening is Henry Pena, a second-year CLA lead fellow. A note that the format for tonight's event is not meant to purely be talking on stage and listening from the audience. We're hoping for this to be more of an interactive conversation back and forth that flows from the curiosity of wanting to know more about someone's values and ideals and how their story built the lens through which they see the world. Tricia has graciously offered herself as an open book of sorts for those interested in the hills and valleys of leadership. So I hope you take advantage of that opportunity and ask her great, thoughtful, and if you really want, spicy and challenging questions. She's here for it. She's ready for it. So I'd like to invite Henry and Tricia to the stage now while I give some brief introductions for them. Henry Pena. Yeah. Henry Pena is in his final year in the Doctor of Nursing Practice program at Grand Valley State University and plans to graduate in April of 2024. Prior to pursuing his DNP degree, he worked as a registered nurse, clinical educator, clinical implementation specialist, and clinical program manager. He currently works as a graduate assistant for the Kirchhoff College of Nursing and serves as the president for both the GVSU Graduate Student Association and the Multicultural Student Nursing Association, Henry is in his second year of the CLA and serves as a lead fellow. Dr. Tricia Thomas has served as the Dean of the Kirchhoff College of Nursing since January of this year. Prior to this role, she worked as the Associate Dean for Faculty Affairs at Wayne State University's College of Nursing. Before joining Wayne State's faculty, Tricia was back here with us, serving as the Assistant Dean and an Associate Professor and later Associate Dean at KCON from 2016 to 2019. She earned an Associate Degree in Nursing from Lake Superior State University, Bachelor's and Master's Degrees in Nursing from the University of Michigan, and could not be stopped, and then continued to get her doctorate in philosophy from Walden University in Minnesota. She's held other nursing faculty positions at the University of Detroit Mercy, Mount Carmel College of Nursing, Madonna University and Drexel University, and nursing leadership positions at Beaumont Hospital and Trinity Health, including as Trinity Health's National Vice President for Clinical Quality and Transformation and Chief Nursing Officer. Please join me in welcoming Henry and Tricia.
Welcome, thank you, truly honored, and I'm honored to be here with you, Dean Thomas. It's a not very often that perhaps someone in my position is able to interview a dean of their own college, Kirchhoff College of Nursing, so it's a great opportunity, and I appreciate the CLA for making this possible. So it's December, first day of December, and my question to start off with, we're just gonna step right into it.
Do it.
Is your tree up?
The tree is not up this weekend. It's gonna happen this weekend.
Okay, that's very telling. Mine's not up, I don't know when it's gonna be up. So hey, we're in the same boat with that. And I did make some notes. So I'm gonna be using my little note pad here to really kind of strike up the conversation as we go along here. So I did have the opportunity, which if you have not had the opportunity to listen to the podcast by our own Maddie Miller, I would suggest you listen to that. There was a wealth of information that I was able to pick up on that, things that I didn't know prior to this conversation. So what I did get out of that were a few things. And as we go through tonight's conversation, I'm hoping to get some more views on leadership and what that looks like through your lens. So certainly what I'd like to start with is, you know, it's through stories that we make connections. And I know for myself personally, stories have been a way to open the door to maybe some doors that have been closed. So with that as the impetus behind my question is actually, how do you believe sharing personal stories contributes to effective communication and leadership? And can you share an example from your own experience?
Sure. Thank you, Henry. So what I would also say is Henry very graciously agreed to have this conversation with us today. And so a little vulnerability on his part, right? The dean of his college. And he really honestly had the courage to step through and say, I asked the question, any way somebody could moderate this? And they said, who do you have in mind? And I said, Henry, and he doesn't need anything more to do. I want to say, I think this is where the willingness to do things and to learn from others and to trust in the process is a huge part of leadership. And it's a mutual trust, right? He trusted that I would be able to put him in a position that would offer him an experience, and I trust that he's going to ask the absolute best questions that are possible for us. So when you talk about storytelling and why do I think it's important for leaders to tell their story, a couple things come to mind, right? First of all, as leaders, we can often make leadership look really easy, as if we don't have challenges or confusion or uncertainty, or that we automatically know what the right next step and answer might be. And honestly, nothing is further from the truth, but I don't often have the opportunity to share that because in my role, certain things are expected of me. So when I can offer experiences honestly from my heart about who I am, I think people have the opportunity to see the who I am and how it influences my leadership. So I've had some really great examples of leaders that were honest and open and answered whatever question may have been put in front of them. And it helped me learn that part of being a good leader is listening well and asking good questions, but also that when someone shares how they made a decision or why it was important or what shaped their decision, it can help influence who I am as a leader. So what Henry didn't say was probably about a month ago, he had approached me about doing Deans on the Hill, kind of this conversation with all the deans all over campus, and moderated an exceptional panel there. And we had students from across campus, but I answered questions, and I had faculty and people who I've been friends with for a decade come up to me after and say, I had absolutely no idea that that was part of your story. So I think it's a gift to open and make real who we are, and also to share that it's not always easy.
It's great. And I would echo a couple things that you said in there, the vulnerability, definitely, which we were able to see at that panel that we had on the Hill. And then there was one more thing that resonated too, which is something I'm finding for myself, and that's trusting the process. That in that vulnerability, trusting the process. So yes, when we're talking about trusting the process, is there a little more you can give me on that?
Yeah. So I think in my earlier years, trusting the process was really hard for me. I was fearful. I was afraid I was going to make a misstep. I thought somebody might critique or otherwise see those things that I was really not expert at. And so when I say trust the process, it's really several things, right? It's stepping back and saying, what do you believe about people? What do you believe about people? Are they genuinely good and kind-hearted and interested and eager to learn and open? Or is what you believe in people that they're here to hurt you or harm you or speak poorly of you or make judgment about you? And when I say learn to trust the process, what I really mean by that is that when you realize that people are genuinely good and they are interested and they're not trying to judge every move that you make, they really are curious and wanting to understand, then you can approach and trust a process in a very different way. Now, that doesn't mean I don't get anxious, right? Doesn't mean I don't get scared. Doesn't mean that there aren't times that I lose sight of that. What it means is when I ground myself in what I believe about people and the world and who we are as individuals and in the collective. I can allow myself to trust the process. I have to say, there have been times when people disappointed me and maybe had some of that judgment or ridicule, but I'm going to tell you that 99% of the time, people come into that space and they don't disappoint me in any way. So trusting the process is respect for others and what you believe, but also respect for yourself, that your experience is unique and it's different and it's important and it's what makes you. And so realizing that you need to trust and respect yourself first allows you then to share yourself with others. And that's a really important part of leadership, a really important part of leadership. And I do get anxious and nervous, but I don't know if you're going to ask me about that. I'll give you a few minutes, Henry.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Great responses. And I thank you for those. So when I was listening to the podcast and I found out that you're a middle child.
I am.
And so I picked up on that. And when I was thinking of questions, one of those questions as a middle child, because I'm the last of three. I'm the only
How many
boy.
Middles do we have?
Yes.
Okay, enough that this could be interesting. Okay.
All right.
Good.
All right. Perfect. So how many not middles? How many are the last child? Okay. Oh, well
all
what
right.
would you say?
Pretty
I'd
even.
Say, a little bit
okay.
even. I'd say the last child's probably one.
How
but
about,
anyways.
How about the oldest, just out of curiosity? Wow.
Oh,
okay.
Maybe not so much.
So all those stereotypes, right, that we hear. I'm just saying. Okay.
Yes. So
yeah.
For the middle children and for you yourself, as someone who has navigated conflict negotiation as a middle child, as we've established, how do you believe this experience has influenced your values as a leader?
Yeah. It's fascinating. And I have to say, so my older sister and my younger sister are very different personalities. I would venture to guess they would say I am too. So let's just right put that out on the table. I think that when you're a middle child, you see the world as the middler, recognizing that if your older and younger sister are very different, right? And they have different likes and dreams and wants and approaches and personalities, and mine do. You have to find a way to see middle ground. And everybody's kind of in a push me, pull you, right? Because it's always two on one. Any middlers, can you relate to that? Right? That there's three of you, so two are gonna buddy up and the other one's gonna be over here. So when you're in the middle, yeah, you're nodding your head. So when you're in the middle, right, you're trying to figure out how do you go from being two against one to all three of us finding a way to make our way through this together so nobody feels left out, right? And everybody can find their way to a solution. So for me, being in the middle, right, I too obviously had my own personality. I just, when people are mean and cruel, it doesn't go well for me. I was just talking to one of my staff and I said, you know, I really had to slow myself down because when people are hurtful or they're cruel, it really puts me into a space like, okay, enough of that. We're not doing that here, right? And I react. It actually, as a leader, gives me a reaction. So I think being a middle child, when you're navigating conflict, first of all, you have to be able to see your own point of view. So as a leader, your own point of view, which is very important. But when you're in the middle, you also have to see the point of view of two other people who may not have your same opinion, idea, approach, right? And if they're very different, and each of you as a view, you've got to find a way to blend those things together to come to some resolution. So it's been a really powerful way for me to appreciate that as leaders, I have a view. It's my view built on my beliefs and the principles that guide my work and how I show up in the world. But there are people around me that I care very deeply about, right? Whose point of view is different from my own and different from one another. But we all have a common goal or common work or a situation that we're trying to move through together. And so my ability to know who I am and what my view is, but to appreciate, respect, respond, acknowledge, value their point of reference also allows me to build a space where then we can come together, find common ground, and move forward together. So in conflict, oftentimes it's people's values, right? Their points of view, something they hold dear that they're feeling really strongly about. And it can be work, and it can be home, it can be politics, it can be social events, it can be world events, right? We're all living through that right now, but it's something in our values and our beliefs, right? Something that we treasure, that we're feeling strongly about that brings conflict, and it creates a tension. And conflict, honestly, is not something to be avoided, though it's uncomfortable and we often want to, right? And what I would say is, what I've learned about conflict, though I want to avoid it, is there is a ground in the middle of the two tensions that exist in conflict that can be navigated to. But you often need to slow down the cadence of the conversation so that everyone can listen, right? To be heard and understood, not to come up with the next answer, right? But also to find those things that they hold in common so that they can move forward with that rather than the tensions and the things that pull them apart. So being a middler, I had a lot of practices with that when I was a kid, and I really didn't appreciate it until, you know, I was older and experiencing my own inner conflict. So I think that's another space to really realize what your own inner conflict is and who you are and why is it creating this tension for you? And who are the people and the resources and the role models and the podcasts and the books and the experiences and the social organizations where there may be people with similar or different points of view to help you walk and manage through that. So probably more than you bargained for there, Henry, but that's where I really think conflict is one of those words, right? And it's not quite four letters, but often something that we experience every day in our life, right? And it's something that we try to navigate through as best we're able. But it is not something to be avoided. It really is demonstrating for all of us that there's a deep held belief or a value that is pushing up in that situation. And we can navigate through it and not avoid it. I've gotten better at it as I've gotten older, mostly, except with my granddaughters. So that's a whole different, we could get into that whole story, right? That could be for a later time. Yeah.
No, that's great. And, you know, what I'm hearing you say is even in this conflicts, there's that space for civil discourse, which is something that we've all had from a competency perspective in the CLA and learning how to navigate those spaces. And even if I'm bringing in some of the things that have been told to me, if it's conflict at that moment, sometimes it's good just to, you know, that limbic system gets fired up and it's maybe take a drink of water and just kind of let things be for the moment before you engage in notice what could potentially be something more than just conflict.
I think one of the most powerful things for me was to learn what happens in my body, to be aware of what was happening in my body when I experienced conflict. And what Henry's talking about is sort of fight or flight, right? Everybody, you've had some experiences with that, right? But your heart rate goes up. You feel yourself in, for me, it's in my chest. I also, more than anybody probably wanted to know, but I also feel it in my lower back. I can feel myself tense up, but I had to really become much more aware of, first, notice what is happening before you launch, right? And it honestly takes a great deal of practice. And there are some days that I'm really good at it and some days that I'm not. And when I'm overscheduled and overbooked and overtired, it can fall off my awareness. But the other part is breathe, right? Just stand there for a minute and just take a nice deep breath. Give yourself 10 seconds, which in conflict seems like a long time, but it can honestly be that simple. 10 or 15 seconds, but you have to be aware of when it's happening and then train yourself, give yourself permission to do that. And you can say, give somebody a reason to help you pause, right? Oh, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Tell me more. And so part of it is pitchy in your tone, right, with your voice, but say something to buy yourself time to take that breath. You can say, oh, gosh, I don't know that I heard you, right? Can you say that again? Right? Those are things. It buys you time. It just gives you a minute to pause and take a breath. But you have to be aware first and then train yourself. Find those two or three things that help you in your brain say, all right, you're feeling really pressed right now and you're going to launch. So you need time, Trish. Hit the pause button, slow it down, and give yourself time. But then you need to find, and I say find, you all have leaders that you highly regard, yes? Mm-hmm. You all have people who you say, you know what? May the good Lord be with me. I never want to be like, right? So you have examples of people that you hope, gosh, when I grow up, so should I tell you? I still say when I grow up, I'm just telling you. So that's a permission slip. Doesn't matter how old you are, when I grow up, I would like to. And what I would say is there are people all around you. Take a day and every conversation that you have, notice. Write it at the top of a piece of paper. And as you go through your day, just start jotting it down. What do they do? What did they say? Oh, I loved that. I want to try that. Or, oh, please, I don't want to do that. And I'm going to write that down because I really want to remember not to behave in that way or to say that, right? People, sometimes leaders sometimes say things and it kind of startles you, right? So I think those are all things. I appreciate you raising that, Henry.
Yeah. Thank you for the wisdom from a middler. I think I'm going to have to go back and apologize to my sister a little bit. So, but that's okay. I think she forgives me.
It's probably okay.
Yeah, I think it's going to be. So this will be my final question before we get into some questions from the audience and open it up to the floor. And it's my understanding that you've spent some time as an executive coach. Again, thank you, Maddie, for the podcast. So you've spent some time as an executive coach. And in that, and reflecting on your time as an executive coach, what key leadership advice or insight do you often find yourself sharing with others? And how has it impacted their development?
Yeah. So I don't know that you'll find this quite as humorous as I do now looking back on it. So at the time, I was the director of nursing practice and research at Trinity Health. And so we were in 20 states, and I honestly had the distinct honor, right, of engaging with nurses and physicians in every part of healthcare as they were really curious about research and evidence-based practice. And I got to travel all over the country. We were in 20 states at the time, 94 hospitals. And it was absolutely joyful work that I fell into, by the way. So this is an important leadership experience by being in a professional organization that was talking about nursing leadership and how do we develop nurse leaders. So Michigan Organization of Nurse Leaders, I met people from all over the state. We got involved in developing a task force for nursing education. I was jazzed, right? So I was just all in. And I met a woman there who I worked with in informal work teams. And then obviously I was a faculty member and she called me one day and said, Trish, I'm going to just drop you some job descriptions. Can you take a look at them for me? And I was pumped. I had students and they were getting ready to graduate and I'm reading these job descriptions and they were amazing. And so she had sent me an email and said, put some comments in and send them back to me, okay? So I dutifully did, right? And I kept thinking of all the students that I knew and people, and I thought they would be great for this. And I put all my comments in and I sent them back to her. And she picks up the phone, she calls me and she says, well, which one do you want? And I'm like, wait, what? And she's, I'm like, wait, what? And she says, well, Trish, which one do you want? I'm like, no. I thought these were for my students. I've got some people. And she's like, no. I want you to draft this and then tell me which one of these you want to apply for. So there, you got the lesson there, right? This is a leadership lesson. I thought I was leading and helping, right? You just never know how doors are opening. But what they told me was, Trish, we've got this great leadership transformational coaching program, and there are going to be cohorts of 20 people, and we'd love for you to go. And I'm like, wait, what's this about? Well, it's leadership. It's leadership development to help you be a stronger leader. And, you know, it's a program. It's 9 months. And, you know, it's a lot. It's a significant amount of money. I won't tell you how much. And if you'd like to go, we'd love to sponsor you. And I was like, so that tells you something about my leadership, too. Like, okay, wait a second. I'm not sure about this, right? I trust the person who is the person that hired me. And I'm like, I don't know. And she's like, Trish, it's great development. Think about it overnight. Let me know tomorrow. And I'm really good when somebody does that. It gives me a minute to process, right? And I went home and I said, it's this 9-month commitment and I'm not sure in the time. And Mel was like, Trish, what do you have to lose? They're paying for it. It's time. You know, you're going to meet new people, right? What do you have to lose? He then later told me that that program made me a better human being. Now, this is a man who adores me and loves me, right? That I've been with for more than 20 years. And he actually told me it made me a better human being. So I offer that to say it has changed, honestly, changed my life. And I was well into my career, right? I had earned my PhD, so that tells you how far along I was. So what I can tell you about executive coaching, which is kind of fancy, right? So that was part of my intimidation in this. Is it started with really important principles about how you help people trust their inner wisdom and their own knowing by framing questions to help them resolve questions in your mind. So you ask thoughtful questions. Mm-hmm. The two other things that I learned in that have been really impactful for me are that self-care in some way, shape, or form every day is a must, and that meditation is a tool to help all of us first become more aware of our thinking, to be aware of the cadence of what is happening in our bodies, in our minds, and in our emotion, minute to minute. And there are many different ways to engage in meditation, but its intent is to do a couple things, to slow down our own thinking, our brains racing, to quiet the chatter, the self-talk that can be very positive but can also be very detrimental and negative, things that we say to ourselves in our own brains that we would never say to another human being or somebody that we cared about. And in doing that, through a 9-month series of interprofessional learning, coaches that offered examples, and then we learned to coach one another, and then actually practiced coaching with colleagues who had identified the want and desire to do this. I think I've been imprinted by the woman who taught me how to meditate. I was not a fan initially. I'm a little hard-driving, kind of determined, pretty intense. I do know that about myself. Self-awareness as a leader is early. Vigorous and curious and totally different personalities, although I see my daughter in one and my daughter sees me in another, so it's a blast. And what I would say is in this executive coaching program, I learned more about me and who I am as a leader and how I show up and ways that I can lean into my own growing and learning. And it made me a better human being, I think. But you'd have to call Mel and ask him, because it gave me tools to be more aware of myself in the moment and to be more aware of others in the moment, right? So it was powerful. You asked, you know, how did it change others? Mm-hmm. I've been an executive coach the better part of 6 or 7 years. I still do executive coaching. both in healthcare and in other industries. I do it pro bono because I believe in it. And I believe that this is how we extend ourselves and offer really a mirror to others for them to begin to learn to trust their own inner knowledge and their own knowing and their own problem solving. So I've done this with individuals over the years. I've written and published and done some work with groups because sometimes our courage and awareness and language can come from listening and hearing others, but also recognizing that we're not alone and that the burden and the challenge that we might be facing that feels very heavy is something others too are experiencing. So the ability to share experiences and be honest and vulnerable can help us both move through, but also accomplish what we never would have been able to do individually. So probably about 6 months ago, I was at home and one of Mel's friends had called and he said, "Trish, what's that thing that you did, that coaching thing with that Blue Mesa girl?" I'm like, wow, he really did. So it's honestly the gift that keeps on giving. Yeah. Excellent.
And you mentioned one thing there, which is something I've heard numerous times, and that's self-care. And as students, and maybe this resonates with some of you as well, we're high performing as students as one. And then with whatever your course of study is, I would imagine from those of you I've had the opportunity to talk with and engage with, high performing. And sometimes it's just the go, go, go. And the word self-care is, well, in my experience, tossed at us, but sometimes I don't know what to do with that term. Yeah. and what that means. So if there's a little bit of advice you would give to those that are graduating, those that still have a year or two to go, those that have 4 months to go, and I'm seeing it now, but that thought of self-care, sometimes I cringe at it because I'm just like, it doesn't exist. Doesn't exist in my mind, right?
Yeah. So I would say, a couple things. I think that what you're saying is absolutely right. And, you know, here we are, we're sitting in a beautiful university, right? Surrounded by incredible people and talent and dreams. And in that, there's a pressure, right? There's an achievement pressure that we all experience. And that kind of wondering, right? I don't want to waste money and I don't want to waste time and what if I don't make it and I'm not sure. So those are all very real things, right? I struggle with the term self-care because it implies that it could only come from the individual, and if you choose to or not to do something, it's all on you. And I have a different view about that. So I am a nurse, and so I think for those of you that have been with us, and you all have for these last several years, you've heard about burnout and COVID and really the social loss and that we've all experienced and the pressures and the demands in healthcare. And I say in healthcare because I think it touched all of us and anybody that was in healthcare helping us keep the doors open, right? I think there's a collective responsibility in self-care. So self-care implies individual, but I think there's both an individual, a group, and an organizational responsibility to build resilience, to create space for people to do something and to be aware of themselves that brings a moment of joy and peace, right? That's what we're looking for. So when I was a nurse, it was running 300 miles an hour, whole bunch of patients that we need to take care of. And before I walk through that door, I need to stop and hit the frame of the door and remind myself that I'm walking in to be a caring presence for this person, right? And it was a really hard thing to do. And I thought I was doing it for another, but what I realized is when I remembered to do it, I was really doing it for me, okay? Because I could show up in a way that I could be there for that person in a way that might lend something to them. But if I come in like I'm on roller skates and I come around a corner, right, and I'm in a fury, that is what that person is going to see. And that's not an open, caring, kind individual that is here to help them become their best selves. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you an example, and I laugh about it now, but this is that whole thing about being aware, right? So I was in the middle of a big merger and reorganization, and it was the first time in the history of the organization that they'd ever had a reduction in force. So you can imagine, people lost jobs. No one there had ever experienced it before. I was a new leader in this area, and I picked up three departments. Whoa, three departments. You got this, Trish. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure, but okay. Right? Like, okay. And I was screaming back and forth, and I started observing the people that were new and reporting to me. And my office was on the major hallway, the major corridor of the hospital. And I had previously been in another building. And this group of people had lost their leader in the reduction in force. And I thought, I need to be there and be present and be visible to them so that they don't feel alone having lost this leader. So I moved my office from one space to another, and I knew, you know, other people would know where to find me. And I was just really kind of noticing. I was trying to get to know people and learn the work they did, and it wasn't nursing, and I wasn't quite a fish out of water, but it wasn't an area that I had expertise in, is the point. And so I was just trying to get to know people, and the doorway leading into my office pulled out into the hallway. So there was, right, they could hear me coming through the doorway. And I started noticing that sometimes I'd come through the door and they'd be chatting and exchanging ideas and whatnot. And I'd walk in and have the pleasantries. And other times I'd walk in the door and everybody's head would go down. And I thought, what in the world is going on here? And so then I thought, well, just pay attention. Does it keep happening? Right? And it did. And so I walked in and I thought, I noticed that. And I walked in, so I said, you guys, I think I'm noticing something, but I need you to help me with it. And they're like, all right. And I said, you know, sometimes I come in and everybody's chatting and, you know, having a conversation, exchanging ideas. Other times I come in, and it looks like everybody's head goes down immediately, like, Trish, we're so busy, we can't talk right now. And I'm not sure if it's me, am I really seeing this, or if there's something going on. And this very brave soul says, Trish, we know what might be coming next by how you come through that door. I'm like, okay. We can hear your footsteps coming down the hallway. And I'm like, my mom used to say, I walk like a herd of elephants, so I can believe that. And I said, okay. And they said, so if you just kind of gently open the door, we know that you're, you know, pretty zen, you're in a good space, there's not a lot of work you're going to ask us to do, and it's going to be an okay moment. But when you come in and that door goes, whoosh, we know that you're on fire, and there's going to be a whole laundry list. That was one of the most powerful lessons for me in leadership, because it told me that I needed to be even more aware of myself. I need to slow it down. I need to be aware of how my presence touches other people. And when I started to do self-care, when I started to say, what is the one thing that I can do for myself today, that's going to be bring me joy, or a moment of solitude, or a moment of happiness, one thing. And it doesn't have to be huge. Get your fingernails done. Take the dog for a walk. Pet your dog for 15 minutes, right? Just things I love to do. But when I'm rushing or hurried or pressured and all that's going on, so really just try to find those little things that you know are meaningful and bring you joy and do them every day. Because when you start to fill your own cup, those little things every day help with the energy to be present and to listen well and to be aware of all the good that's happening around you. So if you're getting ready to graduate, or you're starting a new job, or you're overwhelmed with where we are in the semester, You know what? Taking that time once a day, I would say two or three or four times a day. If you don't know what those things are, sit down for 5 minutes. Here's your self-care. Write down, brainstorm, don't critique it. What are things that bring you joy? What are the activities? Maybe it's jogging and running. Maybe it's lunch with a friend. Maybe it's going to see Christmas lights or spending 15 minutes in a bookstore, right? It's going to be different for all of us, but just start writing them down. Put them in, I say write them down. That's old school. You know how old I am right now. So let me try it again. Put it in your phone. Start a list, right? Because when you have a moment, it'll give you the chance to do that. The part about group self-care, and again, I think there's a responsibility in groups and organizations. Start your conversation or meeting with something positive and good that happened that day. Start a conversation about something you're thankful or grateful for. Start a conversation with appreciation, right? Those are ways, if we can make those habits in our groups, professional groups, our family, go home and say something exceptionally kind to your kid, it'll throw them off guard. They won't know what hit you, right? I learned some of my best leadership practice with my daughter, by the way, when she was growing up, because I figured if I could practice on her and Mel, that I would know whether or not I had the cadence down. And then they got smarter, you know, and they'd say, all right, what course did you go to? Did you have something you went, you know, whatever. But and then as an organization, right, I think you're right. I think we can put lip service to we care and build resilience. And it's incumbent on leaders, but it's also incumbent on all of us. To have the courage to say out loud, I know that you're asking us to build resilience and to be mindful. I'm not feeling like I have the opportunity or space for that. Can we talk that through? Mm-hmm. Can we talk that through? I hear you asking us to have self-care or be resilient or find time, and I'm struggling with that. Can you give me some ideas? Right? It's not an individual or a group or an organization, but how we collectively make that commitment to each other and trust that when I say that out loud to someone, that what they're hearing is, I trust your knowledge and your wisdom, and I know you care about me. So can you help me and us find a different way through this?
Wow. Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And now, like I had promised before, we'll get into some of the questions for the audience. So I know we have a couple of microphones. So does anyone from the audience have a question for Dean Thomas?
Hi. So I know that we're coming out of a time of the pandemic, and I was just really wondering, as someone who's spent time with both my parents in the medical field during COVID. How has COVID influenced your leadership style?
Yeah. That is honestly a really powerful question. Several ways, I think, right? I think as I think about my own leadership and sort of skills and attributes and things that I held very dear, COVID did a couple things for me. It helped me become more aware of my own limits. It helped me realize that evidence and best evidence emerges and we don't have all the answers. So a reality that I knew, it brought me back to a real appreciation for teams and leaning into people's strengths. But as a leader, I also realized that people are pretty wiped out. They're pretty spent, and in healthcare particularly, where they were living in tremendous uncertainty, offering hope and courage and treatment and all the things that we do when we're trying to help people heal, with this reality of we really are learning and the science is emerging. And while I want to offer hope and care and concern, I also feel like there's a lack of congruence or truth in that. What was going on in the world socially also affected healthcare in a very different way, but also my leadership. So in healthcare, we were all heroes there for quite some time, right? We were all wonderful. We went in, and when no one else was there, everybody in healthcare was, right? and the world stopped, but our healthcare providers were there. I don't want to leave out grocery, gas, right? So let's not get too carried away here and a little arrogant over here on the healthcare side, right? But there were a lot of people that were on the front line of that. My leadership style changed because I realized that the social contract about you go in, you show up, you do good work, you go home, really shifted. People learned how to do remote work. They learned how to connect differently. But that contract about start and end time of your workday and what your life around you was shifted for the world. People realized that time with family and friends and colleagues and in the groups that they enjoyed had a different level of importance in some ways than it might have before the pandemic. And as a leader, if I want people to engage in activities, right, that help them cope and to see possibility and to engage in a way that's meaningful, I need to honor that differently. And I can honestly tell you, I didn't before the pandemic. And I think I was an okay leader. I was completely unaware. So you just, when you know better, you do better, right? And that's what I would say. The other thing that I realized about the pandemic in leadership is, I think in large part because of what was happening in the world, right? And the social dissonance. And we can all think of, I thought, honestly, told my daughter, Kristen, my granddaughter twins were about 8 months old, right? So they were still drinking formula and very tiny. I said, give it a couple weeks, we'll get through it. Everybody will go on spring break. They'll clean things out, we'll be back. Don't fret. And I look at that now and I think you're a nurse and you said that out loud. But I thought when COVID hit and we were seeing all the death and we're struggling to find our way through and hospitals were closed and people were not getting care and these horrendously vivid pictures, both in our work, but on TV. And then I don't know that I was really catching my breath, but I had found cadence. I called every one of my employees every day and I had a list and I just kept going through the list to talk to them on the phone every day. That was my leadership change. It's something that I still try to do, right? But that was one thing. Stay connected, talk to them, talk to people, listen. When George Floyd happened, and I was in Detroit, I had never in my life ever experienced anything like that. And I have to tell you that it knocked me not only back on my heels, but all the way down on my fanny as a leader. And I realized that I had much to learn by listening to others. And I honestly believed, I had been the minority in many of my workplaces, and I honestly believed arrogantly and errantly, so let me add those two things, arrogantly and errantly, that I was a good ally, and that I was very aware, and that I had supported many things in my leadership role, right, around diversity, equity, inclusion. And what I really realized was how very wrong I was, and that it came from a space of a kind heart and an arrogant mind. And that was another thing that truly changed my leadership because of COVID. And I think the last thing was I had to give myself permission to be vulnerable, to not know, that when people expected me to know, it had to be okay to say I don't. And so my connections with people, listening, making phone calls, checking in, asking people to leave their workday. How crazy does that sound? Honestly, unplug. But as a leader, it really did change me, and probably in those ways most significantly. Yeah. Thank you.
I think I saw another question. Yeah.
I first want to say I love your voice. It's very calming and very peaceful. Like, I just want to throw your rose first. But I also was wondering, you got your whole little spiel up here. You've had a lot of new jobs and a lot of new leadership positions. Yeah. So us coming into leadership positions, I want to ask you, what's some tips or tricks or some things you need to really make sure when you're coming into a new leadership position? Yeah.
So first of all, I've had the honest gift of walking into every position and being offered a promotion without looking for it. I shared one. Don't let your age get the better of you. I graduated when I was 20 and I had my first formal leadership role 2 years later. Don't let your age or lack of experience, these voices in your head, get the better of you. You are ready, you are prepared, you are exceptional, you have gifts to offer. The second thing would be when people tap you on the shoulder and they tell you they see something in you. You'd be great for this. Wow, I watched you, blah, 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 and I'd love for you to come to this meeting and talk with my friends. Believe them. Even when you don't see it in yourself and you really don't, it's like my, I don't have that. You do. Trust what people see in you. Reach for the stars. Trust your gut instinct. If you want to be the next astrophysicist leader of, that's what you're heading for. Surround yourself with people that are on that path. Spend time with them, eat lunch with them. I can tell you that I still feel like an imposter some days. But when people say to me, you're talented, you're gifted, Maddie, Trish, you have leadership experiences to share. What I said to her is, yeah, Maddie, I'm not sure that I understand what that lecture is and what the wheelhouse, I'm not sure that I'm the right person. She said, you absolutely are. I said, students, the community, I'm in. So what I would say to you is, I've had a lot of great experiences, and I've been in practice in academe my entire career. I made a promise to myself when I finished graduate school, after I worked 3 part-time jobs to get myself through as a single mom, that I would do whatever I could do in my level of power to help someone get through school easier. And here I am, a dean. When people open a door, I remember a boss said to me, I need you to go to this conference, and I need you to learn what care management is about, and I need you to come back and then build it here. And I was like, I don't know what that is. And she said, none of us do. And I said, Linda, I can't do that. I don't, I have no idea. And she said, nope, you don't. And I said, I don't want to overpromise. And she said, you're not. And I said, Linda, honestly, I don't. She said, Trish, you're an exceptional clinician. You've been a manager. You're a clinical nurse specialist. You understand reimbursement. DRGs are coming. And if we don't get this built, they're closing our hospital. So all I need you to do is go. All I need you to do, and that, so when somebody says that to you, and I was like, ugh, right? Trust that what they're seeing in you, no matter how old or young, no matter how many formal degrees or programs that you've gone to, walk through it, step into it. And you know what? You wanna hear about my failures though? Would that help?
I'd love to hear that.
Okay. Sometimes that's why I say we make it all look pretty easy, right? I was about 4 years out of nursing school, so I'd worked midnight shift. I decided I wanted to go back and get my bachelor's degree. So when we think bachelor's degree, it's usually 4 or 5 years. I can tell you nursing. I went 3 years, and then I knew I had 3 years. But I had to work. I had to have benefits, right? I had gone to school, basically put myself through, had scholarships and whatnot, but I had student loans that I need to pay back. So I had to work Fridays and Mondays and every weekend in order to go to school, wasn't online, go to school and pay bills and have benefits. So I had gotten out of school and I probably was a little cocky, if I'm being honest, but I was a little bit on the, you're finally through, and I took a job. And I thought it was going to help me in a leadership role, believe it or not. And I knew I had been in the hospital and I had been working there, and I knew the leaders and the department. And I got into that job, and it was not my thing. And I had raised such hope in it for myself, and the people were pretty closed, pretty cutthroat, pretty competitive. And that wasn't what I was accustomed to. I've learned how to play in that game. It's not my space, I'll just tell you that. And it was, anybody think I've ever failed an exam? Anybody think I've ever failed an important exam? A big one. A big one that I needed for my job. And if people ask me about it, I tell them. I don't stand on top of the building and shout it from the towers, but I did. I failed an exam that I needed to be able to do a job that I really wanted. So it's equally about walk through the door, but no. And guess what? I didn't get the job. And guess what? I had to tell people that I didn't pass the test. And more people came to me and said, I didn't pass my boards, and I didn't pass, right? When it happens to you and people are aware, then we'll come around and support you. But it was a monumental, epic failure for me that I had never experienced. So it happens. And I've had jobs, you know, if you look at my CV, the gift of it is I have taken different, very non-traditional jobs and ended up being promoted into roles that I never would have considered for myself. And that's the beauty of it. And I'm gifted because I'm in nursing. So you can hopscotch around. You don't have to leave your discipline. You can just pick a new area to work in, but failure happens. I've had some real tankers for jobs. You don't see that on my CV when you look at the jobs, though, do you? You just find the next right best thing for yourself, and you listen to the people around you who know you, and when they tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, you want to try this? Do it. Find mentors. My best advice to every person in this room, I don't care how old or young you are, find a mentor. Find people that will give you honest feedback, that you hold in high regard as a leader, that you might aspire to be similar to. Doesn't have to be in your own discipline. It can be at church and in a professional group and at work and maybe at school. But find someone that will give you honest feedback, but also open doors for you. I still have mentors. Did you hear me say I'm a grandma? I'm just saying, I still have people that serve as my mentors, and they've been with me for 35, 40 years, right? And you find, but that would be my best advice. Don't let your age get in the way. Find a really good mentor. Know you're going to fail. Pick yourself up. You don't have to tell the world, know what's going to happen, and find that next thing for yourself. Of course.
I think we have another question. Time for one more question.
That went really fast.
Thank you so much for your wisdom and your sharing your experience. I'm a pre-med student, prospective healthcare worker. And I think as students, we are imbued with certain principles, whether they be charity, dedication, pragmatism, empathy. And I feel like a lot of the narrative that I hear, whether it's media or just from my mentors and contacts I have in the healthcare system, that the structures and institutions are very rigid and sometimes are not very, are not engineered to do the job that they're supposed to do. Correct. When you are a leader in a situation like that and you feel like your principles are being, you know, are in conflict with, you know, the system, how do you be an effective leader?
Yeah. I would start by saying, yes, 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 and it is true. And you identified, you know, several values, right, that guide you. I think this is part of knowing yourself, the wisdom in know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when it's a hill to die on, know when it's important, but probably not something to get overly accelerated about, right? I love that you started with your values. So you have to know your own values and principles first. What guides you? What do you believe in? What's important to you? The notion for me in being a leader when my principles are in conflict, starting all the way back at the beginning here, right? Learning how to listen well. The reaction is going to be there. The principle, that sense about this is totally against what I believe. And I just cannot do this. So when you're having that thought, it's just a time to pause. Honor that. Honor that and be aware of it. Doesn't mean you have to act on it. And then it really is, for me, trying to slow things down. As leaders, people want us to have immediate answers and an immediate response and all of the information. And right there, they're not coming to a leader if they could figure out how to do this themselves. And what I've learned is often I need to slow myself down and slow the thinking down, but ask good questions. There have been times in my career where it was such direct conflict. First thing you do is talk to a mentor or a trusted colleague. I can tell you that if all you do is talk to your friends who are going to reinforce your own thinking, it's not helpful as a leader always, right? So have a diverse enough group of trusted leaders, trusted colleagues that don't always think the way that you do, but that you respect and honor and run it by them. There are times all of us need to stand on the principles that we believe in. Trying to go into work every day when you're pressed up against something that is so contrary to your own values is tough. It's hard to show up well. It's hard to lead well. But I would say slow it down. Talk it through. Buy yourself time. There's nothing wrong with saying, that's a great question. I need to think about that. Or you've brought something to me that I hadn't considered. I'd like some time. And can we get together, right? So you have to slow it down. When it really is something that is in total conflict, you have to make a decision, right? Can I lead, and for me, can I lead and love and learn in this environment? And if I can, and it means challenging myself a little bit, great. But when I really realize that it is not going to be possible, then I need to make some different decisions, right? Yeah,
that time has flown by. Gosh, it's been quick. I have one closing question, and I struggled with whether or not I was going to ask this question.
Do it. It's going to be fun. We're going to go have some food in a minute.
Yes. So, you know, it's December 1st. I saw a little bit of snow today in between clinical simulations. So it was...
We do have windows in the health sciences.
Yeah,
there you go.
That was a reality. So two more weeks. You're heading north.
Yep.
It's 82 degrees, Michigan day.
Okay.
All right, low humidity, sky is blue, clouds are fluffy white.
Yep.
Trees on the right.
Yep.
Dunes and the lake on the left.
Okay.
Pot-free Michigan road. Well, you know, pot-free, as in holes in the road.
Yeah.
What's on the radio?
What's on the radio? Okay, don't laugh. What's really on the radio is 80s hits.
Is there one hit in particular?
So do you guys all know the Big Chill? Anybody familiar with that movie? It's a movie about a bunch of guys that get together on a weekend. They're college buddies. Anybody older enough to remember the Big Chill? Like, show of hands, a couple, good. So it's just this kind of snappy... So these guys get together once a year. It's like their college reunion. And they all had their, you know, goofy roles in college, and they all now have these highfalutin jobs, right? But they revert back to their 20s when they all get together. So that's the kind of music that I listen to. Mm-hmm. I danced with my daughter when she was young to that music, and I walk on the treadmill to that music. So it's just, it's lighthearted. I listen to Christian music for what that's worth to everybody, but if I were, you know, rolling down the windows and jamming a bit, that's where I'd be.
I see you tapping your foot.
I know.
I think you hear it. I think you hear it. So thank you very much for your time.
Of course.
Thank you for your wisdom and your insight. I'm sure that we all here have a few things to take away with us over this break and exercise some self-care, whether that be in a group setting or an individual setting. So thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to an episode of The Rewind, a podcast series by the Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies. The audio for this episode was captured by Mark Washburn of Gyrus Media. This episode was produced and sound engineered by Maddie Miller. The Hauenstein Center for Presidential Studies at Grand Valley State University is inspired by Ralph Hauenstein's life of leadership and service and is dedicated to raising a community of ethical, effective leaders for the 21st century. For more information on our center, our Peter C. Cook Leadership Academy, or our Common Ground Initiative, visit our website at www.gvsu.edu/hc.
To keep up with our current events and recurring initiatives, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or LinkedIn, all of which can be found linked below. If you liked this episode, consider giving us a review and rating so we can be found by other podcast listeners. Again, thank you for listening.